Dudek. Remember, the 4th of December runs the old children's rhyme. You know the one that helps kids recall that on this day in 1952, a smog descended on London, killing thousands and prompting the introduction of the Clean Air Act. And thanks to that, we'll be broadcasting across clean air this afternoon, and I confidently predict that none of you will be killed by fog over the next 90 minutes. In fact, the time-wasting radio show could lay claim to being pretty much the safest radio show in the country right now, equipped as we are with fire extinguishers, goggles, safety helmets, carbon monoxide detectors, a full body harness with dorsal D-ring conforming to British standard EN361, and a pair of round-ended scissors. Because, hey, safety is paramount, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, for crying out loud, this is only my fourth week presenting a radio programme, and the last thing I want is to have my ass sued by a disgruntled listener because I'd failed to issue the correct listening instructions. So, sit back and relax. Allow the music of Toto to gently wash over you. Make no sudden movements. Good. Are you ready? Then let me tell you what you have to look forward to on the show today. In about 10 minutes, we'll be stroking our chins thoughtfully as we consider the futile arguments of Mr. Shirley Lee, vocalist with the Mostalist from London band Spearmint, who'll be trying to convince me that Dexy's Midnight Runners aren't just a feeble bunch of Northern Soul revivalists fronted by a transvestite with a speech impediment. To offset the pain, we'll have records from Kev Hopper, Kling Klang, Prefab Sprout, and many more. Then, as the big hand approaches the 10, a strikingly handsome gentleman by the name of Simon Bookish will be entertaining us live in the studio with his strikingly handsome face. The slightly less handsome Neil Scott will give our synapses something to chew on with his thought for the week. The even less handsome Steve Graziak will advise us on sporting matters. And the repulsively hideous Andrew Ward will be telling us about the week in politics. My name is Rodri Marsden, and I'm no oil painting myself, but I do have a fantastic personality, which doesn't get me invited to many film premieres, but does stop me being accused of witchcraft. Some other men who have a history of not being witches are Northamptonshire's finest band since Bauhaus, which isn't saying much, but as I help pay for the record to come out, I can pretty much say what I like. From the finest album of last year, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the song Feel Cheap, performed by the now defunct rock and roll band Host.
Something and they wear a face.
there you heard Host with the song Feel Cheap, an instruction that I can identify with, engaging as I do in all manner of depraved activity on a Saturday night and waking up engulfed with shame on a Sunday morning. Right now I feel like I feel like a million Turkish lira, in fact, which at current exchange rates is around 42 and a half pence and stops being legal tender in 25 days' time, so I'd best get out and spend myself quickly. Now, last weekend, en route to this studio, I had a run-in with a goth. I wouldn't normally provoke a goth, but this happened quite by accident on a tube train on London's Northern Line, running from Morden to High Barnet via Bank. As the tube pulled into Stockwell Station, two large, strapping, prime specimens of goth swept majestically onto the train. They sported black leather coats, pointed boots, and looked like they were suffering from a severe lack of vitamin D, along with vitamins A, B, C, E, and also niacin and riboflavin. The sides of their heads were shaved, but the hair that remained had been sculpted into soft peaks, rather like Delia Smith might attempt with some egg whites on her ever-popular cookery course. As the faint whiff of patchouli oil wafted down the carriage, I turned to my girlfriend, Jenny, who was sitting next to me, and informed her of my thoughts. "Goths," I murmured knowledgeably. "Yes," she replied. The thing is, it's very easy to laugh at goths, which is probably why I do it, but it hasn't always been this way. Throughout my teenage years in the mid-1980s, gothicness was the only clearly defined subculture that existed in the Bedfordshire town of Dunstable, and as I went about my business wearing a succession of sweaters and jerseys, learning to play the bassoon or playing for the local cricket team, I yearned to cast off my knitwear and get myself, I don't know, a rubber necklace with a tooth attached. That, I imagined, would seal my reputation as an individual, someone who stood apart from the crowd, albeit with another crowd, all of whom were also sporting rubber necklaces with teeth attached. I was secretly jealous of boys who had tickets to go to Dunstable Queensway Hall, a venue that had possibly the worst acoustics in the country, in order to see bands with names like Velvet Tomb, Heavy Cloak, or Cauldron of Doom, along with heavily made-up girls in voluminous purple skirts and monkey boots, who would feign excitement during the gig, but secretly be heavily into UB40. I'd seen what these gigs were like, courtesy of Fields of the Nephilim videos on late-night television. The jet black-haired fans would stand at the front, and when the choruses arrived, they would lift their arms aloft, fingers outstretched, and slowly move them out in a wide arc while following the movement of their hands with their eyes. Today, this is a motion I more normally associate with a builder from Cheam advising me where the various joists are running across my ceiling, but back then, it was a gesture of defiance, of rebellion, and I wanted a part of it. Sadly, I thought the music was a bit rubbish, so I stayed at home. But anyway, these goths sat opposite us on the train, grimly staring into space while silently thinking about, I don't know, their forthcoming calligraphy classes or something. As the train pulled into Oval Station, they looked at each other. One of them burst out laughing. "We're on the wrong train," he said. "You idiot," said the other one, also laughing. They got up hurriedly and stumbled off the carriage, giggling. I laughed as I watched them go down the platform. "Stupid goths," I said to Jenny. "That would make a fantastic cartoon strip." At which point I noticed that, on the other side of Jenny, was another, larger, more frightening goth, wearing spectacles, through which he was gazing at me intensely. "I beg your pardon," he boomed. Nothing," I said. "Did you say stupid goths?" he asked. Yeah, I suppose I did. I thought it might make a good cartoon strip," I replied. "And," he continued, "don't you think that's a bit rude?" Jenny, my girlfriend, butted in, at which point I breathed a sigh of relief because she always makes everything okay. Well, she usually does. "It's a private conversation, so it's none of your business," she said to him briskly. "Oh, and that makes saying stupid goths okay then, does it?" boomed the goth. "Yes," snapped Jenny. At this point, I became scared of the goth, and as the train pulled into Kennington, I grabbed Jenny's sleeve and we got off the train. The goth remained in his seat, casting a beady eye, and no doubt a dozen spells in our direction, because he needed to go via Bank, you see, and we were going via Charing Cross. I never thought I'd say this, but thank God for the two distinct and separate branches of the Northern Line. Now on the Time Wasting Radio Show, a band who needs no introduction whatsoever from me, so allow me to introduce Prefab Sprout. We'll be right back.
like fencing falls and lovely girls I'll never kiss. Leave it behind on an overcrowded desk where the in-tray is hard and the out elbow will be. Before the tea room's filled with flirting couples call, remember to call. And flow, it skips like a river.
I Never Play Basketball Now from Prefab Sprout's debut album, an album that I listened to a few years ago as my former wife left our house to go and live with another man. Dexy's Midnight Runners, or Dexy's, as they're known by those people who can't be bothered to say Dexy's Midnight Runners, will be very familiar to anyone who remembers the long, hot summer of 1982. Not only did they spend an unheard-of 6 weeks at number one, NB, make sure you check this fact before broadcast, they even got to number 19 in John Peel's Festive 50, a far greater achievement, I'm sure you'll agree. I was a big fan of the song Come On Eileen, but I was only 10 years old at the time. Since then, my stance has hardened. I was persuaded to listen to the album Don't Stand Me Down, and I hated it. Then when they provided the theme tune to a BBC sitcom about a painter and decorator, I stopped even caring. But today on the Time Wasting Radio Show, Shirley Lee from Spearmint is here to persuade me that I'm an idiot and Kevin Rowland is a genius. Shirley, welcome to the programme this afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Erratic would be an adjective that I would use to describe the work of Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Well, I think they're one of those bands that people quite often say you love them or you hate them. And I don't really agree with that, because I love them and I hate them. I mean, I think what I love about them is they were very individual, they were very passionate, they were completely uncompromising, and in fact they had this manifesto of self-expression and of being uncompromising.
Right, right.
They seemed perpetually at war with the music industry.
Right.
And when the record company wanted to take out a page ad in the NME, they used that space to preach and publish an essay on the importance of self-expression. They also did a lot of spoken stuff, which I thought was brilliant.
And what is it about the spoken stuff? Because obviously, in your own work, there is a great deal of spoken material over over backing, much as we're doing at the moment. Except,
I think it's just unusual in rock and pop for, because it's usually a pop song.
Yeah,
and you, I suppose in the '50s, you got those odd bits of people speaking, and that's quite good in a corny way. But for people to actually speak and sound sincere and relaxed is quite rare. And they used to have a go at doing that, and it didn't sound relaxed. It sounded really pretentious, but he went for it anyway.
Yeah,
and they were quite sort of, romantic spoken passages on some of the albums.
Of course, I mean, you could say, and it has been said, that that Kevin Rowland has a voice that only a mother could love. But
presumably... Well, no, I mean, I loved that as well. The fact that he was singing soul songs in this squawky Midlands accent, you know.
Where's he
brilliant.
From?
I think Birmingham, I'm not sure.
Right.
But it's certainly in the Midlands.
The black country.
Yes, right. Definitely from there. But on the other hand, I kind of also hated them because they did seem really pretentious all
right.
the time. They seemed a bit phony, faintly ridiculous, quite painfully awkward at times. And each album they did,
yeah.
they had a different look. Like the first album, they dressed as dockers with kind of donkey jackets and beanie hats. And
yeah, and they went through the kind of the emaciated tramp look.
Sort of gypsy school urchin in dungarees for the Come On Eileen stuff. And then at the end, the final album... they dressed as accountants, and
oh yeah, it was. They looked like kind of preppy Ivy League kind of.
Yeah, and that all seemed a bit phony.
Can I say you're not so far?
I'm going to convince you of something in a second.
Okay.
And also, I'm sick to death of Gino and Come On Eileen, as you say. I don't want to ever hear those again.
No,
but 1985 was Don't Stand Me Down, which you mentioned. That
yeah.
was the final Dexys album.
Right.
And then not much happened. They split up. And 14 years later, word came through that Alan McGee had signed Kevin Rowland on a solo deal to Creation.
Right.
Which was interesting. And then there was a pause, and suddenly these posters appeared around London of the artwork for the album.
Yeah.
And the visual stuff had always been important to Dexys, and had actually worked. I mean, those looks we just talked about were actually memorable, and, you know, you remember seeing it on Top of the Pops.
Yeah, released, yeah.
So somebody had the idea, and I don't know who, it'd be quite interesting to find out who, to come back with a really striking image.
Yeah.
The artwork for the album should be Kevin wearing a dress.
Yes.
Which it was. He's standing there in this... dark blue velvet ball gown, which he's got makeup on, he's got a pearl necklace on, he's pulled it off the shoulders to reveal his chest. You've got it there.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. He's hitched up the front so you can see his panties and his stockings.
That would have been an interesting photo session to be attending.
Yeah.
And he looks quite serious, but you wonder whether he...
He's gazing at the camera very seriously.
Yeah.
Now, this went up around London as a teaser for the album on the billboards, and then the album came out, and it's just one of those images that for some reason struck a chord and just caused universal anger with everyone who saw it, because I think people just didn't get it. They didn't know whether it was a kind of gay statement or a transvestite statement. And they just got angry. And the reviews of the album, they didn't appear to have listened to the album. They were just looking at this picture and basically venting spleen on it. The album came out and it bombed. But what I want to say to you, Roderick Marsden, I'm going to prove you wrong on this. This album is a work of genius.
Okay.
Kevin Rowland is a genius for putting this together. It's an album of covers. And normally, I'm not a fan of cover versions because what's the point? They're never as good as the original. But what he does here, he chooses cover versions that reflect an aspect of the previous 14 years he lived through where he wasn't successful and he was in a bit of a state.
Right, okay.
These songs helped him through that period. And he manages to inject more individualism into these cover versions than most people do into their own songs.
Okay.
Now, we're going to play the opening track. You're going to know this song, but for this to work, we can't chat through this. You just got to open your mind, open your heart. You've got to let this come down over you. You've got to listen to this. You're going to know the song, but just let it wash over you.
Okay, let's just start the song.
Okay.
It's over, it's over, it's
no
over.
No more, it's okay.
Yes, I know.
Oh, you know.
Remember that time? You know that time?
Mum.
It's okay, honestly.
Fucking heavy, ain't it?
Let it go. Forget it, baby, it's okay. Forget it.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. show them all the beauty that they possess inside. Give them a second chance and make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need somebody they can look up to. There was nobody around who fulfilled my needs. Lonely place to be. And I tried to depend on me. Listen. I decided long ago I didn't want to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, I'd like to live as I believe. No matter what they say about me, they can't take my personal dignity. Because the greatest love of all is happening to me. To me. I'll find the greatest love of all inside of me. The greatest love of all. Oh, it can be achieved. Learning to love yourself is the greatest love. I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a second chance, but make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. I decided long ago I didn't want to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, I'd like to live as I believe. No matter what they say about me, they can't take my personal dignity. Because the greatest love of all is happening. To love yourself.
Learn to love yourself.
Is the greatest love of all.
Greatest love of all. And if by chance that special place
that you've been dreaming of,
that you've been dreaming of,
if it leads you to a lonely place,
if it leads you to a lonely.
Find your strength.
Find your strength in love.
That's The Greatest Love of All by Kevin Rowland from his album My Beauty. Which Shirley Lee from Spearmint is attempting to use to convince me of his genius. I was moved by that, and maybe the album should have been sequenced with you doing that introduction before it comes on, because but you built it up very well.
Well, what happened when it came out was he went out and played. I think it was the Carling Festival. I think it was Leeds,
right?
And he went out and played live, wearing the dress, singing to backing tapes, and he only lasted about three songs. He got booed, stuff was thrown at him. And then the album came out, and this story got around that it had sold less copies than any other album ever issued. But they were selling like 300 copies, which you and I know.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's quite a lot. But I think the story was it was the worst selling album Creation had ever been involved in. And then, of course, he got dropped. And
with the amount of discussion it had, you'd have thought it would have done a bit better than that. Mm. At least with curious people wondering what on earth he...
I think the furore about the sleeve just became a barrier to people even giving it a chance. You know, this is very strange.
But he did. I think he successfully turned what we know as quite a sickly song into something quite.
Well, the album's full of stuff like that. Are we going to play another one?
Yeah, we should do. I should note that Simon Bookish walked into the studio during that, and he was quite overwhelmed by by the sound of Roland. So you know, the people in the studio are starting to gang up on me now. What's the next one we're going to hear?
Okay, well, this is labelled with love, the Squeeze song, which on the Squeeze version is kind of about this washed up female alcoholic. Yeah,
right.
In Kevin's version, he sings about himself. As a woman,
right?
I guess hence wearing a dress on the front, and he's the washed-up coke addict in the song.
Okay, let's hear that.
She opens the top of her new cocaine packet, shuffles about in her dim and dark hovel like a frightened old witch. With pure panic she shivers, sweats like a pig, and the neighbors she sickens. Her darkened room, it has long seen a visitor. Her frightened scowl is a permanent fixture. The postman delivers the final reminders. She tries not to see them and thinks herself finer. Sniffs not to think of I, me and myself. Lines up the coke and goes off in a dream. Home is a place I don't know where that is. So my dreams have been bottled and labeled with love. During her youth, a North Country cowboy made all her nightlife a time of excitement. She moved to his manor and stayed near the cowboy. She learned from a distance how romance won't fix her. He became drinker and she became mother. She knew that she couldn't live life with another. She became a controller and moved to a city. Scared of her feelings, she kept herself pretty. Drinks not to think of I, me and myself. Gets into fights and ends up in a cell. Home is a love, I don't know what that means. So the pain has been bottled, I'll stay with my dreams. She made up her mind to become a pop singer. She believed then that nobody would scorn her. She'd have all the power and then she'd be happy. But with no self-esteem, she threw it away. There came a time when nobody was listening. It was so hard just to sit with her feelings. In a dirty old room, in a sweat covered bed, she'd lay and she'd fret and sniff from the packet. Sniffs to remember I, me and myself. Chops at the coke and drops more beads of sweat. Home is a place I don't know where that is. So the pain has been bottled, I'll stay with my dream.
Kevin Rowland with Labelled With Love there, brought in by Shirley Lee from Spearmint, who's with me this afternoon. So well, I am feeling more benevolent towards Kevin Rowland now. I mean, I did think of him, he's becoming like the person you see in the amusing outtakes of clips with him singing in front of Jockey Wilson while he's singing about Jackie Wilson. But have you ever met him?
No, I haven't. Apparently he's normally seen at the moment on the commuter train from Brighton in the mornings,
okay,
into London. So but I don't know what he's working on. There were some great Dexys gigs. They reformed and did some gigs last year, and they were actually great.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would you say to him if you met him?
Oh, I'd just avoid him.
Would you? Yeah. Because you had, I remember you having a particularly grim encounter with Terry Hall once. I was wondering if you might try and beat that.
No. I think that taught me to.
It taught you to steer clear of your heroes.
Avoid.
Shirley, what are you doing yourself musically at the moment?
Spearmint, we're just finishing the new album, mm-hmm, which is going to be called Paris in a Bottle.
Okay.
And should be out in the spring. We're just finishing off the mixing.
Okay.
But earlier this year, we did some acoustic shows in Germany, and we wrote some songs specially for them.
Okay.
And they're out on a CD, which is just available via the website, which is spearmint.net. And the CD's called The Boy and the Girl That Got Away, and it's the 9 songs that we wrote for those acoustic shows.
Okay, and I have a copy in my hand, and we're going to listen to one of those songs. This is called Your Southern Skies. Anything you'd like to say about this particular tune?
No, it's my favourite. It's a love song.
Okay. This is Spearmint and Your Southern Skies.
The black girl's name is Janice Ian. Beneath a sky full of stars I've never seen. I'm alive like you, uncertain at the zoo. I take a cold hand in mine. We're kissing cabs that cross the river in the night. Someday I'd like to be under stars I've never seen. Your southern sky.
You just heard Your Southern Skies by Spearmint from their new acoustic album, and many thanks again to Shirley Lee for bringing his lovingly cared for Kevin Rowland records into the show today. One thing I know that Shirley isn't particularly fond of is sport, which makes it a singularly appropriate moment to invite back once again Steve Graziak for his thoughts of a sporting nature. So here he is via a crackling telephone link to the deepest Surrey countryside.
We'll start with football. And in one of the most unlikely moves since Thora Heard allegedly attempted a limbo dance a few years ago, Southampton manager Harry Redknapp is considering a return to arch-rivals Portsmouth as manager following the sacking of the hapless Alan Perrin during the week. If Redknapp does return to Portsmouth, then Sir Clive Woodward could be favourite to take over at Southampton. He's apparently already in the wrath of goalkeeper Antti Niemi for telling him to kick the touch more often, and apparently wants Peter Crouch to return after a successful goal-kicking season at Liverpool. In tennis, John McEnroe has announced his intention to return to the ATP Tour after announcing that he will play in a doubles tournament in San Jose in February. McEnroe's return comes after a relatively recent successful comeback by Martina Navratilova. His return isn't the only major tennis comeback this week, though, as former women's world number one Martina Hingis, who retired at the age of 22, also announced that she will be making a return to professional tennis and may receive a wildcard to play at next year's Australian Open. Organisers of the event are keen to attract as many top names as they can after a number of injuries ruled high-ranking players out of last year's tournament, but they are hopeful that Tim Henman will be fit for next year's event. They need somebody to put the nets up. Colin Montgomery launched a scathing attack on the media last week, accusing journalists of being obsessed over his continued failure to win a major tournament, as well as questioning why his achievement in topping the European Order of Merit for the eighth time wasn't being applauded. Colin, I've watched European Tour golf. You only get applause if there's anybody there. A few squirrels and your caddy don't count. Lennox Lewis has ruled out a return to boxing after saying that he did not want to risk his legacy by accepting a rematch with former world heavyweight champion Vitali Klitschko. Speaking at a gala evening to mark the opening of Muhammad Ali's museum in Louisville, Lewis added that he wouldn't return to the sport even though it needed him to make a comeback, also saying that he didn't need to compromise his reputation as one of the few boxers to have proven longevity as a great champion. I think he's probably right. He must have been brilliant if he kept dodging punches with a head that size. Some of Britain's top female athletes have teamed up to star in a new charity calendar called Ladies of the Track, Babes of the Field. The saucy shots, which include javelin thrower Goldie Sayers dressed as a Playboy bunny girl and sprinter Donna Fraser posing in leather gear as a witch, fellow sprinter Abby Oyapitan, who also poses in the calendar, said that the calendar allowed the athletes to bring their personalities out. Well, I suppose that's one way of putting it. Let's just be thankful that Fatima Whitbread retired a good few years ago, thus keeping her personalities firmly out of the public eye, so to speak. And finally, baseball. The Boston Red Sox have filed a lawsuit against former player Doug Mienkiewicz after claiming ownership of the ball which featured in the last play of their 2004 World Series success. Apparently, Mienkiewicz pocketed the ball at the end of the match and has refused to give it back since, even though he played for the New York Mets last season. Now, this is a bit of a challenge for you, Rodri. We'll call it Challenge Rodri.
Okay.
You don't have to put on, like, a blue jumpsuit and run around town centres looking for half a tonne of lumber or anything like that. Don't have to worry.
People will be thankful for that.
Yes, it's just a simple question. The question is,
okay,
how much do experts think that this ball is approximately worth?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, how long is a piece of string to utter a cliche? I don't know. $10,000.
No, you're way off.
Oh, what a surprise!
It's a good job you're not a baseball historian, because apparently this ball could be worth somewhere in the region of $3 million.
That's one expensive ball, and you'd be chucking around on the beach this summer, certainly.
Well, no, they actually reckon it could be worth more, because they're just basing this on a kind of comparison with other recent really kind of expensive baseballs that, you know, have led to records and what have you. So
one ball that won't be making very much, certainly in any British auctions, will be the one used in the cricket match yesterday, in which we were crushed unceremoniously by Pakistan. Are you depressed?
I am, rather. It's a bit of a come down, really, isn't it? I think everybody kind of saw us going over to Pakistan and thinking to themselves, oh, we'll beat Australia, so that's our kind of carte blanche to go and destroy the globe.
I suppose one positive outcome is we won't have to see that fat opera singer bellowing out Jerusalem and ever again.
Well, let's hope not anyway. That would be a relief for everyone, I think.
Steve, thanks for ringing in today. Let's now have a heady trip back down memory lane to 1988, when virtually none of us were listening to The Shrubs. There you heard The Shrubs from 1988 from the album Vessels of the Heart. The singer of The Shrubs, Nick Hobbs, was my employer for 8 long years, during which time I assembled a marvellous collection of anecdotes about his strange behaviour. One of my favourites was the time he spent a huge amount of money on an Apple flat-screen cinema display to hook up to his PowerBook. Sadly, because of the limitations of the PowerBook's graphics card, he couldn't control the brightness on the enormous screen, and he found it far too bright for everyday use. But rather than send it back or buy another model, he just took to wearing sunglasses in the office. And for all I know, he's still doing so today. Right, Hungary. We've all been there. Well, some of us haven't, but we all know someone who has, and even if we don't, we surely know someone who knows someone who has. But regardless of your personal associations with Hungary, I'm going to play a record that was made in Hungary and by Hungarians. This is Egykis Erzsi Zene.
Waktamani kung watamanani kung waktamani kung watamanani kung waktamani kung watamanani kung waktamani kung watamanani kung wewewe bizu wo 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 bizu wewewe bizu wo 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 bizu wewewe wo 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 wewewe bizu wo 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 bizu wewewe bizu wo 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 bizu wewewe wo 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 wo
That was Egykis Erzsi Zene with Pay Away, which sounds a little bit like Play Away. And I can't help wondering how differently that children's television programme of the mid-70s might have turned out had they dispensed with Brian Cant, Tony Arthur and Jonathan Cohen and given control of the show to some post-punk Hungarian improvisers. Sadly, we will never know. Someone who does know a lot is my friend Neil Scott. Each week he dazzles us with his thought processes, and this week is surely no exception. So allow us to neatly segue out of Sweeter Memories by Todd Rundgren and into our Thought for the Week. Oh dear, these technical glitches happen occasionally. If the first rule of radio is never have dead air, the second one is surely do not play Kev Hopper instead of Neil Scott. But here he is with his Thought for the Week.
No matter how busy you are or how little attention you pay, it's impossible to escape the noise and clamour of current affairs. This week, the loudest noise has been about pensions, and though I haven't been listening to the content, I can tell by the nervous tone that it's an emotive subject. In modern times, pensions have become the secular equivalent of the afterlife, with heaven being a regular income, a lump sum, and a life of leisure, and hell being poverty and uselessness. As a reaction, people are working longer hours than ever before, desperately saving for salvation, believing that they'll reap what they sow. And it's true, it is a measurable deal. You can invest now to live later. But you have to ask yourself, is it worth sacrificing the most vital years of your life to drudgery? This is not to say that people should give up work and live in the now. It's more that who you are now is a part of who you are forever, and to neglect self-cultivation could lead to a far greater impoverishment than any lack of material wealth.
Thank you to Neil Scott. Someone emailed me during the week to say that they use Neil's part of the show to go and make a cup of tea, which is not only unfair but untrue, as you can't make a cup of tea in the 75 seconds that I allot to him. At least not a very good cup of tea. So, Simon Poole of West London, I hope you choke on your tepid, weak brew. 2 years ago, I stood in a bar in West London, bored to tears at the pathetic entertainment on offer, when one man strode forth in a bright red jacket, military regalia, and tatty shoes, and proceeded to sing and gesture to the sound of swelling synthesizers that emanated from his iBook. I said to him that night, "Simon Bookish, I'm going to make you a star." He said, "I doubt it," and I said, "Yes, you're probably right," and I bought him a drink. Today he's repaying me for that drink by coming onto the time-wasting radio show to perform live and tell us a little bit about what makes him tick, and indeed talk. Simon, welcome. Or should I call you Leo? I'm not sure what I should... Oh, you're not even turned up. Let's turn him up. Call you Leo.
Yes.
Do people address you as Simon, ever?
They do, all the time.
And does that annoy you? I mean, it can't annoy you, because actually that's what you've called yourself.
No, it's fine. It was meant to be a mechanism to distance myself from the violence that happens on stage.
I see.
That was all it was. So,
does that explain the Simon bit or the bookish bit?
Both.
Both, yeah. Fine. Okay. I remember you trying to form a band in an Indian restaurant in 2001 when I first met you, and... But obviously you've become a solo artist instead. Is that because you've failed to find the correct people, or are you enjoying the solitary pursuit?
I think it's a little of both at the moment, to be honest. I'm going to work on the band next year.
Oh, there is a band imminent.
Yeah, possibly. I'm looking for two drummers, a marimba player, and yeah, that's it.
Okay, well, if you are two drummers and a marimba player, then go to simonbookisher.com and email him and inform him of that fact. So obviously I'm used to seeing you performing and singing in a beautiful Scott Walker-esque gorgeousness voice.
Thank you. So many compliments that you've paid me already this afternoon. It's a
and what time is it? 12:56.
Bit overwhelming. Yes.
Well, I'm sorry about that. But but today, I understand you're going to do something slightly different. So maybe you could tell us why you're doing it this way.
It's just a new project, and. In contrast to all the things last year that were very much dysfunctional pop songs,
yes,
I've given up pretending that I'm a pop musician this year. And
okay,
it's a bit more. Well, I had all this text left over from what I was working on last year,
right?
And reams and reams of it. And rather than try to shoehorn it into songs, it's ended up as spoken word.
Okay,
and yeah, that's more or less the.
Okay, so what are
you... More or less it.
Does this first thing you're going to perform for us now, does it have a title at all?
It's called Deception.
Okay, let's hear this.
I have somehow conned the administration of the train wreck into believing that I am qualified to drive a train. My ruse was to simply walk in each day and sit down in a small room which I had decided was my office, although it more closely resembled a dirty cupboard. I am able to convince them because I am extra, extra friendly to the man who sits on the security gate. Each morning I wave and shout in a Cockney accent, "All right, Charlie," and he opens the gate and lets me in. On the train itself, I'm enjoying my job very much. Although my lack of training means I do not have the special key to open the doors. So people are having difficulty getting in and out. Fortunately, since the train drives itself, I don't have much else to worry about, and I chat away to the passengers, who are fooled by my blue uniform and hat. Two women have no tickets. I explain to them that they will be subject to an on-the-spot fine. I then realise I do not have a book to issue a ticket from, so pretend I'm being benevolent and let them off. Back in the office, but I am worried. The managers are on my case and are waiting for me to slip up. Someone's been rifling through my files. My suspicions are confirmed when I fling open the door and find my yacht has been taken away. A yacht being a perk of the job. I wander outside and everything becomes calm. There is a long, verdant lagoon with thick green moss underfoot and weeping willows by the water. In the distance is a house on an island. People are slowly swimming around it. People are slowly swimming around it. People are slowly swimming around.
Many thanks to Simon Bookish, and he'll be back a little later on to perform another song for our delight and enjoyment. It's not often that I get to crow in a self-obsessed fashion about something particularly marvellous that's happened to me, but this week was crowned in quite the most spectacular fashion on Friday afternoon when I was informed that little old me has been given a weekly column on a British national newspaper. Sadly, I haven't been given a roving remit to comment about single mums, falling house prices, illegal immigrants or violent knife attacks, all of which I'm firmly in favour of, incidentally. But rather the weekly task of writing 500 words about an issue in the world of technology. Unless I think of an alternative by Monday afternoon, my column will be headed with the words "The Geek," which I don't mind particularly, other than the fact that it doesn't describe me particularly accurately. Notice, for example, how I failed to handle the equipment at Resonance FM for the past 4 weeks with any kind of flair, and how I have to rely on Jamie here to literally hold my hand for 90 minutes every Sunday afternoon. Yesterday, as I wandered through the streets of Earl's Court, looking for somewhere to celebrate my good fortune, I was mulling possible alternatives to the Geek with my companions. No one could think of anything half decent. It was Friday evening, after all, after a long working week, and suggestions came forward, such as the Gook and the Gonk. As one of these is a fluffy toy you put on your desk during exams, and the other is an offensive word to describe someone of Vietnamese descent, I rejected them both as inappropriate. Then, as we reached the top of the road, we saw a pub where we could commence the celebrations. The name of this pub, incredibly, was the Prince of Tech. I was thereby dubbed the Prince of Tech for the evening, and with luck, after a trawl of some technology websites and a few columns in The Independent, I'll rightly assume the title, the King of Tech. So this week will be disgustingly busy. On Monday, I have to hot-foot it down to the newspaper offices to have my photo taken before realising that I really need to have my hair cut and having to get it done in 10 minutes by a one-eyed, throat-slashing barber who has a shop nearby specifically for this purpose. Then I have to make my way into the centre of town where I'll be taking my driving theory test. This will be the first test or exam I've sat since 1992 when I emerged from the final exam of my music degree, reasonably confident that I'd scrape a barely adequate 2-2. Fortunately, the driving theory exam doesn't require me to write any essays. Although that would be brilliant, wouldn't it, to turn your paper over and see a question which read, "Is Socrates' position concerning the moral authority of the state consistent with his view that one should never approach a humpback bridge in third gear?" And if Socrates was gathering speed while motoring down a steep incline, what kind of thoughts would be going through his mind? Discuss with reference to the capture of Leon of Salamis. You have 1 hour, starting now. Fortunately, the questions are all multiple choice, and the sample questions I've seen are preposterously easy. For example, you are following a cyclist and wish to turn left at the next junction. Should you A, hold back until the cyclist has passed the junction? B, sound a deafening blast on your horn while hurling abuse at the cyclist and hanging out of the window? C, ram the cyclist with your bumper, stop the car, get out, beat him about the face with a cricket bat and steal his packed lunch? Or D, assassinate the cyclist and his immediate family, then kill all other cyclists, all their families and friends, and round off by killing everyone in the whole world, while illegally having your fog lamp switched on in almost perfect visibility? Of course, now I've said that the questions are easy, I'll no doubt report back next week on my pathetic failure, and now I've had to fork out another £14.50 to retake the test. Stay tuned, listeners, to Resonance FM. Only time will tell. My cover has been blown, ladies and gentlemen. The following segment was pre-recorded yesterday morning, in fact. I wasn't going to tell you this, but I have to in order to explain the explosive giggling about 5 minutes in. The explosive sound of Mountain there, reminding us that it's just about time to go over to Andrew Ward and his rundown of the week in politics.
Everyone likes to watch naked soldiers fighting. I know I do. But within reason, and this week, a criminal investigation was launched following the publication of images from a video showing a violent initiation ceremony for the Royal Marines. A military source told the Daily Telegraph that drunken initiation ceremonies were not unusual in the Marines, adding, when they go away on an exercise, there will be a theme of, say, heels and suspenders that they get into at every opportunity. The video featured two naked soldiers who were forced to fight bare-fisted while kneeling in mud, before one was kicked in the face until unconscious, prompting one former Marine to admit, there is a fine line between character building and humiliation. This video may have crossed that line. Speaking to the BBC, Conservative Party spokesman for Homeland Security, Patrick Mercer, said, just imagine a young man turning up in his unit and being made to wrestle naked in a field while his non-commissioned officers are dressed up in women's frillies. I mean, it's not very dignified stuff, is it? Oh, I don't know.
A further video was published on Tuesday featuring Marine recruits in Taunton, Somerset, wrestling naked, eating Weetabix covered in soil and downing pints of cider before leaping headfirst into storms. A spokesman from the Ministry of Defence said that the recruits are just letting off steam, tactfully declining to point out that they were in Taunton after all, or that Weetabix in soil is actually a local delicacy and served in all of Somerset's best restaurants. Meanwhile, in Germany, television newsreader Peter Hahn has launched a campaign to abolish Father Christmas, who he claims is a product of a consumer society. Mr. Hahn says that Santa is a symbol of shopping and has nothing to do with St. Nicholas, who still teaches us today that giving does not make you poorer, but richer. Herr Hahn, whose message that giving presents is good, but buying them is bad, will be particularly welcome among shoplifters and burglars, has previously written a best-selling book called The End of Fun, which urged Germans to re-examine the values that held society together and said that being German was so much fun it was dangerous. Back in Somerset, or somewhere near it anyway, I haven't checked, the Tory Leadership Hopeful David's UK tour finally came to an end, with Tory Leadership Hopeful David's David Davis and David Cameron addressing a packed livestock market in Exeter, where David Cameron joked that the two Davids had spent so much time together, they were thinking of entering into a civil partnership. Quizzed on the Turner Report into the future of pensions, both Tory Leadership Hopeful Davids were unanimous in agreeing that they hadn't read it. Earlier in the week, the two Davids had also addressed the Confederation of British Industry conference in Islington, where Mr. Davis gave a speech in which he said that he and Mr. Cameron were spending so much time together that rumours of a civil partnership were doing the rounds. If I hear any of these rumours, Resonance FM listeners will be the first to know.
Thank you, Andrew. I too was shocked by the video of the Royal Marines, and I wondered what your personal reaction was when you saw them goading each other and placing boots into each other's faces.
Well, what I thought was what coincidence it was, because you were asking me only the other week if I knew where you could get hold of a schoolgirl's uniform and a surgeon's outfit, weren't you? And a video camera.
No.
40 naked Marines.
No, but thank you for pointing that out anyway. Other things that I noticed this week, shall I go through them quickly?
I'd be pleased if you could.
I thought you would. I noticed that Tony Blair had his nuclear energy speech interrupted by protesters. And of course, it's not your job, Andrew, to have opinions, merely to kind of tell us things exactly as they are. But are you in favour of nuclear power?
I don't know.
You have a lot of wind and water down there in Brighton, of course.
Almost too much. There's a whole sea's worth of water, and I couldn't tell you about the wind.
Well, it would certainly cover your own energy needs, I would imagine.
That's right. We're self-sufficient in wind.
I'm glad to hear it. Do you have a pension, Andrew?
I'm not actually sure. The Turner Report, I know why they didn't read it, is because pensions are very, very, very boring, and they're probably supposed to have opinions about them, but they couldn't make themselves read through
so
the report on pensions.
So it would be foolish to ask you what the shake-up of the pension laws means to you personally.
What it means to me personally? Well, I don't think it's appropriate to ask what it means to me personally. I think what we need to think about is what does it mean to you personally?
Me? Well, I welcome pensions. I think they're a good thing.
I think controversial views. But that's
an important one,
isn't it? Lord Reith would be proud, I'm sure.
I'm sure he would. What else?
What did you make of the story on the front of this morning's Observer?
I've not seen it, actually. Not yet.
It's a humdinger, it really is.
Is it? Okay. I'll be sure to check that out. sorry.
We think he's on broadcast.
I also noticed that that Andrew Dismore, MP for Hendon, broke the record for the longest speech in the Commons. He spoke for 197 minutes. But apparently that was not as long as Henry Brougham, who spoke for 6 hours in the Commons at some point in the 19th century.
Well,
so actually,
exactly.
I don't really understand that. Should we speak for 6 hours, Andrew?
I'd love to. I broke the record for the mile when I ran a mile in 17 minutes.
Yeah, the news organisations must have been queuing at your door that day.
No, actually.
Strange.
All right, fair enough.
Strange, but true.
Yes. Andrew, thank you for ringing today. And as Andrew Ward goes off to do whatever he wants for the rest of the day, here are Kling Klang. Liverpool's Kling Klang there, who, like me, have a slight obsession with French prog rock band Magma, and as such have managed to secure a spot on this radio show, a spot which you just heard there. That track was called Heavy Dale. And if you like the idea of a drummer and three toy keyboard players creating an intense racket in a small venue in front of a scattering of disinterested punters, I heartily recommend you try and catch them live, unless they've split up, which is certainly possible, as I don't get out very much. Now it's time to return wide-eyed and sweaty-palmed to Simon Bookish, who is back in this small room with what you might call a vengeance. Leo, hello again.
Hello again.
You have a gig next week, is that true?
Yes. I'm playing next Saturday at a gallery called NOG on Brick Lane.
It's not called NOG.
It might be called NOG or NOG. It's spelled all in uppercase, you know.
I'd love
as is the one of graphic
Nog.
Designers these days, but I don't know whether it's NOG or NOG. Gallery NOG.
Okay, fine.
There's 182 Brick Lane, and that's going to be from about 8 o'clock.
Excellent.
And there's other good stuff as well. There's like David Cunningham, X Flying Lizards, is going to do something, and yeah, all fun.
And when you play live these days, is this the kind of thing you're doing now, or have you abandoned
the
tunes of old?
It depends. I mean, it's all about disappointing the crowd these days and doing pop music in front of the audience that wanted the arty speaking music,
right.
And vice versa.
I see.
So.
Okay, fine. And the marvellous tunes that we've heard from you, are they set to come out on record at any point?
They are.
That question wasn't flagged up earlier.
Totally forgotten about this, but I am in fact releasing an album of the pop music in January.
Marvellous. So, what will that be called?
It will be called Unfair Funfair. Simon Bookish.
Excellent. You're going to play another song for us now.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd like to introduce it yourself.
Yes. This is an invasion. So, it could have been Berlin, I suppose. Or perhaps a large city in the north of England. Wherever it was meant to be, it exuded a particular kind of familiar greyness. When the alien spaceships arrived, no one seemed especially surprised, although the crowd did coo with some admiration at the massiveness of the vessels and the gracefulness with which they arced gently and exceedingly swiftly in and out of the atmosphere. They swung across the skyline as if suspended on strings. Devil amongst the tailors, two at a time, maybe eight in all, each one gleaming chrome, insect-shaped, miles across and utterly silent. This flyby was followed by a sort of ceremonial landing or invasion as the final ship slowly descended its angular edges, allowed it to land flush against the surrounding skyscrapers. Like the final piece of a gigantic jigsaw puzzle. The walls of the spaceship concertinaed out magnificently, forming an instant chrome railway line on which the aliens trundled out in a little wooden tram. Spindly, grey, anthropomorphic bodies, big bold eggheads, disgruntled puckered little mouths. This anticlimactic entrance, coupled with the aliens' unexpectedly cliched appearance, caused the crowd to erupt into cruel, mocking laughter.
Many thanks to the exquisitely enticing Simon Bookish, who we just heard performing. Next week's guests performing live will be the wonderful duo Stars in Battle Dress, whose album Secrets and Signals was one of the best of last year, and whose live performance at Bush Hall in April was so good that I'm going to be putting them on myself at London's Water Rats in January, the 28th, to be precise. So from their album Secrets and Signals, this is Stars in Battle Dress with Come Write Me Down. That was Stars in Battle Dress with Come Write Me Down from their immense debut album. And as I said earlier, they'll be in next week to do their thing in exactly the way that they do their thing. And that brings us to the end of this week's programme, in which we heard an enormous amount of Kevin Rowland, a couple of performances from the delightful Simon Bookish, and me blathering on at length over a range of distinctly smooth backing tracks. We're just over the halfway point in this series, which is slowly but surely becoming almost listenable in content. So for details and archives of previous shows, point your web browser, if indeed such a thing is possible, to timewasting.net/radio. And you can email me, although goodness knows why you would want to, by using the email address radio@timewasting.net. Now it's time for the characteristic longish track to end the programme. Resonance FM is, of course, a station where no one would raise an eyebrow if they heard a track which set the Declaration of American Independence to music. But when that track has been recorded by the band Fifth Dimension, perhaps better known for their song Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful Balloon, that eyebrow might twitch just a little. So as I advised at the top of the show, sit back and relax and enjoy the stumbling poetry of the lines: "But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." In contrast to the Resonance FM schedule, coming up is not a programme for young children called something else, but instead, in a hilarious mix-up, you'll hear a special broadcast of Allen Ginsberg's Howl. See what the toddlers make of that one. My name's Rodri Marsden. Thanks for listening. And now I'm going home.
these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights,
that among these to secure